Welcome to VI. Welcome to the VI Players Podcast on South Shore Ave Radio. Once again, to subscribe to the pods and the blog, go to SouthShoreAve.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAve.com. My name's Kelsey.
This is Dudley.
And together we're going to co-pilot this podcast, which is going to be focusing on the NBA Finals, which should be a classic once again. But first off, before we go into that, we got to talk about the epic Game 7 and the classic series from the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Golden State Warriors. Now, this is going to go down as a classic series, something that's going to be played over and over again on NBA TV across every summer from now on. This was the first team, Headley, that was able to wobble Golden State's legs and put them on the ropes for the first time all season. And it was kind of unexpected, because that's just something that we expected from San Antonio had they made it, right? But
yeah, I think 99.9% of the population, probably outside of Oklahoma City, figured it was the same thing. It was going to be Golden State. Actually, not only did everybody think it was going to be Golden State and San Antonio in the conference finals, more or less everybody expected whoever came out of that series was going to win it all.
Right.
That was the type of, call it clout or substance that San Antonio has, you know, winning 67 games. I think that was actually a team history high in terms of wins.
Right.
Coupled with the 73 by Golden State.
Nobody expected to see.
You know what I mean? That, you know, you can't even feel bad for getting that wrong.
No, not at all. And honestly, going into the series, I actually thought it was going to be not a sweep, but I thought maybe like five games, maybe at most six for Golden State.
Against Oklahoma?
Yeah, that's what I thought initially. And the reason why I thought that was just because just the way Durant and Westbrook play, I just figured that they're still not going to trust their teammates as much as they should, which has been the pattern for them pretty much their whole career, especially this season. And even though they beat San Antonio, because I just figured, you know what? They have a history of playing San Antonio really well, so I just figured this was the same thing. So going into Golden State, I figured, you know what? The only way they could beat them is by playing together and not doing the hero ball shtick. But, you know, but they certainly fooled me, because by game four, they had Golden State, like I said, left for dead.
I'll say this much. I have so much respect for San Antonio. Like, as old as people may seem to think they are, but with them getting Aldridge and how Kwame's been playing, it's a young team again. I've always said I can't count San Antonio out for nothing. When they took San Antonio in six, mm-hmm. I figured that this was going to be a series for Golden State. Now, I didn't expect them to get mollywopped the way that they did in Oklahoma Golden State in game three and four. Like, after as you said, after the first four games of the series, with them up 3-1, it was hard to fathom Golden State coming back from that.
Yeah.
Just because Oklahoma was playing the best ball they've played together in years. And it seems like everything was just culminating at the right time. It was almost like using a runner's analogy where you train to peak at the right time.
Right.
And it just seemed like Oklahoma was peaking right at the World Championships, like right at the right time of the season.
Yeah.
After four games, man, I mean, it's hard to fathom, like, you know, winning 73 games and 9 defeats, and for them to lose a series, I couldn't believe this was happening. But it was hard to see them coming back, just seeing what the first four games looked like.
Yeah, and I found myself rooting for Golden State especially after game five, because when they went down 3-1, you started hearing a lot of, well, you know what? They're overrated. The 73 doesn't mean a thing, you know, now without the ring. And now, you know, last year was a fluke. You know, they should have lost to Cleveland, you know, had they been healthy, all this garbage. And it annoyed me because it was like, okay, we just watched Golden State dominate the NBA for the last 2 years, right? And all of a sudden, they're not has-beens, but they're, you know, this is a fluke now? Like, come on.
You can't fluke out a season. You can't win 73 games and call it a fluke. Like, be real. That's not like getting hot for a couple games or a couple months. You're literally hot the whole season.
Yeah.
It's not a fluke. So, I mean, but you know how people is, man. They go how the wind goes. Like, from game to game, people start predictions sway. And even with myself, right? Because I thought for sure that OKC was going to win it in six.
Right.
But when they lost at home, I was like, this is Golden State's lose now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It just goes that way. But I have to take some responsibility in the sense that I, too, after the first year, I thought Cleveland was going to win. And I really felt that if Cleveland didn't have losses of Kyrie Irving and Love, that it was theirs to win. Not so because I felt that Golden State had a lucky season, but I just didn't expect Golden State to win so quickly. Like, this was their first, that was their first year really putting it together. And for them to just come and win the championships, I was like, nah. They have to feel that pressure somewhere and squeeze too tight. But they didn't. I mean, they, granted, Cleveland was, they weren't at 100%. But at the same time, Golden State was a lot more even keel than I would expect from a team that really had no playoff experience up until they won it.
Yeah, and usually that's what history dictates, right, in the NBA, in terms of you have to lose before you win, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, that, typically that's how it is. Like, you know, you take some lumps before making it over the hump. They literally went from, like, a non-playoff team or, like, a first-round team to win it all. Chris Paul's looking at them and like, this ain't fair. You know what I mean? Like, it was really, they did a gigantic leap.
He's like, man, I came to the Clippers, came to Dunk City for this.
You know what I mean?
Watch these guys get, like, surpass me, basically.
Yeah, basically.
But I swear another part of this of this series that kind of rubbed me the wrong way, at least in terms of the Thunder. It really rubbed me the wrong way that Westbrook and Durant laughed at that question of Curry's defense being underrated, even though Curry in Game 5 picked Durant's pockets twice in crucial moments of the fourth quarter. You know, and it kind of just led to the whole thing of, man, like, people don't really, people have an issue with Curry, you know, and this team. I don't know if it's because he looks like he should still be in an algebra class, and sometimes they're a bit cocky on the court, but it just kind of further proved that these guys aren't really crazy about Curry, especially after you won the MVP unanimously. You started hearing comments from different guys, and it's like, wow, like, what did this guy do to deserve this? You know what I mean?
I disagree. I don't feel like that. I got no problem with that. Like, yo, I'm tired of, this is playoff ball. I mean, you are supposed to kind of, like, rub salt in the womb of your opponent. I mean, this is not the time to be all lovey-dovey and be like, kumbaya. Like, it's, you're up against these guys right now.
No,
you know what I mean? Like,
and I agree. I agree with you. I agree with you in that sense because, you know, we both came from the era of old-school basketball. What I'll basically say for that is just, they could have just avoided the question. You know what I mean? Like, just answer it just diplomatically. Even though it is a playoff war and they're going against, you know, the grind of the series.
Why be diplomatic? For what? What? I mean, are we supposed to be allowed to want to go do film with the opposing coach?
Well, no. I mean, again, it's at that point in the series where it's like, you know what? I don't want to say just be diplomatic. I don't want to say that. But to me, at that point, they should have just...
Do all that at the end of the series. I got no problem with them taking little, you know, if you want to call them gut punches at each other, so to speak, mm-hmm. during the press conference and whatnot. I mean, hey, it's a world there, man. I'm pretty sure, you know, there's a mutual respect for all these guys in the NBA. They you know, a lot of these guys have played, either if they played at each other's charity events or they played on Team USA. this year's NBA as opposed to yesterday's NBA are a lot more cohesive because of social media and because of all the 12 months a year type training. So, you know, they're in the basketball mentality all the time or to get in this, even if they're not playing in season.
Right.
So I highly doubt that this is going to cause a rift in between them, but I also like the fact that, you know, we're not going to be praising everybody's strengths when they're supposed to be out there trying to take it to them from one another.
Now let me ask you a question. Did you like the fact then that Westbrook didn't shake Curry's hand at the end of the game?
No, that wasn't cool. Tell you the truth, I'm not too sure. Did he shake anybody's hand?
I don't know. It's like it's still not quite confirmed. I'm not sure, to be quite honest with you. It looked like he didn't, though.
That I find is punkish. Like, at the end, when it's over, they beat you fair and square. Yeah, it hurts, like, ish that you basically coughed up a 3-1 lead. But now that the series is over, yeah, show some sportsmanship, and you should give the hands at the end of the series, so to speak. Like, you know, in hockey, it's more formal. They have the lineup, and they'll do it.
Right.
Basketball is kind of like, I catch you in that kind of mode when I see you. For him to just walk out, to me, that's no better than when Isaiah Thomas and the whole Bad Boys walked off against Chicago. Now, that looked worse because the whole team left.
And then walked in front of Chicago's bench.
Yeah, exactly. But individually, that's no better than what Westbrook did if he actually indeed walked off and didn't say ish to nobody. That I find it uncalled for.
Yeah, and it's and what I was saying before is I agree with you in terms of guys, you know, not having it's not a kumbaya moment in the playoffs, because I thought it was classless, and at the same time, I didn't necessarily have a problem with it, if that makes sense. Just because
with Westbrook fucking off,
yeah, just because, you know what, you kind of miss the days when opposing players and teams don't like each other. Westbrook is kind of that throwback mentality. You know, in the sense that he just doesn't give a shit about what anybody thinks.
Well, that's why I asked you, did he not shake anybody's hand? It's one thing if he didn't shake Curry's hand for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. But if he walked off and didn't say nothing to anybody, you don't have beef with everybody. That to me was a little, that's where I feel it's a little much.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I'm not 100% sure, to be quite honest, if he did shake anybody else's hands or not. The camera sure didn't pick up on that. The only person I saw, you know, you saw everybody else shaking everybody's hands. You saw Curry and Durant give each other the hugs and, you know, and all that stuff and the daps and everything. But I didn't see Westbrook anywhere, you know, at that point.
And quietly, you know, not to get off base a little bit, but this is the reason why Mark Cuban was saying that Westbrook is not a superstar. It's for his antics, not necessarily his play on the court, even though you can question if he's a leader by the way that he plays sometimes. But in terms of being a megastar, it's those little antics with him walking off. Like, it's not completely shocking that he did something like that. But again, that's why some people are like, he's not really a megastar. He's not really a guy you want to market in the NBA through and through because of stuff like this.
Well, it's funny. Do you think that, because for me, I actually kind of finally came around to the notion that I think he's their best and most important player. You know, he's like 1A, and Durant is like 1B. You know, in that sense.
Well, funny enough, I don't know if you saw when on our chat group, I was like, "Yo, it's interesting how Westbrook was first team All NBA and KD was second."
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So again, in terms of play, He's definitely a megastar in that regard. I'm talking about the wholesome pictures of players that you want to market as ambassadors of your game.
Mm-hmm.
Westbrook doesn't have that off-court presence or off-court demeanor, personality to be corporate America in some regards because of his dumb antics that he does. He's either cursing fans and stuff like that, and you know what I mean? Like, he just gets in dumb. He gets in dumb antics. In terms of his play, by all means, his production over the years, over a long term of years, shows that. But as much as you were saying, like, okay, he, you know, he's 1A, 1B, whatever the case you want to call it, when it comes to pressure, and I'm not saying that KD's any better because we've seen what he's done.
Right.
I just find that Westbrook as a point guard, as great as his stats will look sometimes on paper, but his wild plays sometimes, his shot selections, his turnovers, sometimes is a detriment to his own team. And a detriment, it's like he self-combusts. Nobody can stop him. Mm-hmm. But it's like he's his own worst enemy at times.
Yeah. The last episode of the AF podcast, I mentioned that if there was anybody in that situation that can come back from a 3-1 series lead that's playing in the NBA right now, it's Golden State. And not just the fact that because they're, you know, such a great team and everything else. Part of it was the fact that I figured they were going to win game 5. And like most people, I thought they would, you know, go down in game 6, right? But a part of me figured was this, like if the game was close, like if game 6 was got down to the wire, which it did, right? Whose decision making am I going to trust? You know, because you know when pressure comes, you know, the flaws get exposed. So in that situation, I'm like, do I trust the defending champions that's won 73 games? Or do I trust the team that's blown the most fourth quarter leads in the NBA this season? Now, to its credit, OKC proved 3 times in that series that they can control those flaws, right? But somewhere deep, I mean, deep down, like in the recesses of my brain, a small part of me just wanted to, I just needed to see it a fourth time. Because I think if they, you know, they overcame that, Headley, you're looking at the 2016 NBA champions right now. Forget what Cleveland's doing on the other side. I just figured whoever wins this series, and especially where OKC was, how the high level that they're playing, I figured if they can show that one more time and really control that flaw and not go back to doing the whole hero ball thing, that they weren't going to be stopped by anybody at this point, you know. But then, of course, they got exposed. You know, they started going back to the hero ball. Westbrook started making a bunch of turnovers. Durant started making a bunch of turnovers. And it's funny because everybody kills Westbrook when the shit is the fan, right? But I find that Durant kind of gets away a lot of times. You know what I mean?
I agree. Because he I feel like as much blame as you're going to put on Westbrook, he deserves just as much.
Yeah, absolutely.
His taking care of the ball and his shot selection was poor too. But before I get to that, one thing I wanted to add to what you're saying about you've seen it 3 times, the thing with OKC, 2 of their 3 wins came out in blowouts. So it didn't have to come to a pressure moment at the end of the game.
That's true.
And then game 1, where Golden State let it slip, I almost felt that Golden State was like, you know what? We'll lose this one, we'll get it back kind of thing. And they didn't play with really the urgency because it was a game 1. But when they decide to change that mentality in their head where it's like, okay, we have to make sure that all the T's and all the I's are dotted, right, they can do it. Where again, OKC, as you mentioned, I think Philly had more blown fourth quarter leads than OKC, but if you're in the same breath with Philadelphia with anything, that's not a good look.
No, not at all.
And it was proven again. It was proven in the course of the series that it's sometimes hard to, you know, to change stripes on the tiger where we thought that, you know, they're going to trust their teammates, and they go back to what they've been doing, not only with Billy Donovan, but what they did with their prior coach. What's his name again?
Scott Brooks.
With Scott Brooks, just playing ISO ball.
Yeah.
Playing two on five.
Watching the press conferences with Billy Donovan, it almost felt like he tried everything to get those guys to buy in, and it seemed like in the playoffs he finally got them to turn the corner. And it's like, it's almost like a recovering alcoholic. It's almost like at the last second, it's like they just took another swig. You know, they took a shot and that was it. They're on the bender again. You know, that's how it felt, you know, to me. But Chris Webber made a great point. I believe it was during game 6. And he said this about Golden State. He said the great thing about being 73-9 is that they know how to play their way out of holes and to act accordingly when the chips are down, right? And the result of that is because since pretty much preseason, they've been taking everybody's best shot, you know what I mean, for like 6-7 months straight, to the point that even teams like Milwaukee or even Philadelphia are playing out of their minds against them. So that whole run, it kind of builds tough skin, you know, especially when you factor in that they started off winning their first 24 games and everybody was gunning for them right at the point. They had every incentive to knock their blocks off. So being that the fact they were down 3-1, you could see, you know, at like looking back on it now, you can see where the panic didn't set in that sense. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, even if you take away the 73-9, the mere fact that they're the NBA champion, anytime an NBA champion comes to your hood, people are going to take your best swing at you.
Right.
And then when you start flirting with history, it's just even a bigger game now than it would normally be when the defending champion comes to your town or when you go to theirs. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and Chris Webber is right. They've been playing, because think about it, at the end of the season, especially when it looked like for sure they're gonna get the 73 wins, and then they had some losses that we weren't expecting.
Yeah,
they really had to hone it in on getting that 73 wins. I still remember when they had to go into San Antonio. I remember they had two games left to San Antonio at the end of the season. I was like, yo, this is gonna be tough.
Yeah, they're not gonna get 70. They're gonna break
the
Bulls'
record. Then they knock off San Antonio with a perfect home record.
Yeah.
Where I thought for sure if I had to take a pick on who was gonna make history, was it San Antonio going undefeated at home or Golden State getting 73 wins? I had San Antonio. I had San Antonio that confidently winning at home to Golden State, and they took them. And talk about Chris Webber. One of my favorite series is when the Lakers play the Kings that year.
Epic, classic.
Epic. Yeah, I mean, like I put that on that type of level, because that to this day is probably my favorite series.
Yeah.
More so even than the Portland one. That series there against the Kings. I can't remember what year it was, but we all know which series I'm talking about. That was bananas.
That was the series where Chris Webber was had his back to the basket from the free throw line, not looking at the basket and wanted to do anything but have the ball in his hands at the end of the games. You mean that series?
play hot potato?
Yeah. And then guys like Stojakovic and Christie, like shit in the bed and shitting everywhere else. And overtime, that series?
Yeah.
No, but that was an epic series, though.
Was that the same where Divac missed, like, a whole heap of shots?
Yeah, everybody did. I remember that game 7, and I remember that went to overtime. The only one that was performing at that point was Mike Bibby. I would have sworn everything that guy was going to be a star after that series is over. I don't understand how he didn't become a superstar after that. It made no sense. But here's a question I'll ask you here before we move on to the finals preview. What does Kevin Durant do now?
Again, this is where, like, when you talk about momentum, a week ago you'd be like, yo, there's no way he's leaving OKC. They're about to beat Golden State. They're in the finals. There's no better place than playing at home. Early in the season, you're like, especially how they struggled with the new rookie coach, you're like, he's gone. You know, people flirt and talk about he's going to be going to Golden State. Even before that, there was links with him going back to his hometown Washington Wizards, and then they shit the bed this year. They even make the playoffs after having I don't want to bring the memories back of what they did to us last year. In the playoffs.
Shh, don't talk
but,
about
you know,
it.
Coming from that momentum, it looked like they were only one key piece away from going deep into the playoffs. Honestly, I don't even have an opinion. I have no idea. he could leave and go to like the Lakers and then maybe try to build with making a new big three over there. Or he could sign long-term with OKC. I have no idea. What I do think is a smart thing, which is one thing I'm hearing, where he signs similar to like LeBron, like a short-term contract.
Like a two-year deal.
And they kind of see, huh?
So like a two-year deal.
Yeah, kind of see where the chips fall, see what other teams are doing, and see if OKC can do something with them. I know in his mind it might look like that Westbrook and KD is a tandem deal going somewhere.
Right.
But I would have honestly, part of me wouldn't mind seeing those guys kind of like separate at this point,
just to see what they can do.
Yeah,
without
like,
each other.
I know they have the utmost respect for each other.
Yeah,
but I kind of want to see how they work. You almost feel like they might be better apart, and that's a scary thing to like. You don't want to make it a science fair experiment like that, and then it completely goes up in smokes because of how good they are together. But part of me feels like, as a fan, I'd like to see what they do apart.
Well, remember last year, obviously Durant hurt his foot, and you saw what Westbrook can do, you know, by himself. And then the year before that, Westbrook hurt his knee. And then you saw what Durant could do because he ended up winning the MVP, right?
So, yeah, but you know what? I kind of want to see them with their own supporting cast.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, as a, again, that's me talking as a fan. I don't know if that makes the best business sense for them as a tandem or for Oklahoma City to try to divvy them apart. But I think the smart thing is probably maybe do a short-term contract. And then, because I know the class of 2017 is fierce.
Mm-hmm.
So, it might be worthwhile
just waiting.
Waiting it out, and who knows? I think a lot of people want to see what the Lakers do. Like, I think right now there's not a lot of faith in the Lakers. But seeing with this new regime, with Kobe finally gone, and now, not to mention, you have a rookie head coach. And there's nothing to say about rookie head coach because, look, you had Steve Kerr won it all last year, and now you got two rookie coaches that's in the finals this year. But at the same time, is he really as good of a coach as he is on paper? Because he really took a defending champion, which was already put together, and then basically played coach for half a season. They historically won 24 games, but are you completely sold as Luke Walton as a head coach? I think there's players out there that's wondering the same thing too.
Yeah, I think the jury's out for him. We won't find out basically until next year. You know, like how could we know? As you said, Kerr set that culture in motion in a sense. So you know, he was basically playing like your favorite substitute teacher. You know what I mean? For 2 months out of the season, 3 months out of the season, right? So,
I mean, good on him. Mm-hmm. But as you said, well, I guess time will tell. And I think that maybe some megastars, before they kind of put that long-term deal and put it in the Lakers' hand, they kind of want to see what is the post-era of Kobe looking like.
What I'll say for Durant is, number one, he should sign that two-year deal with the one-year option so that he can collect more money next year. If he stays with OKC, Headley, he's projected to make $200 million. Over 5 years. I mean, it's beyond ridiculous, right? Baseball numbers, finally, right?
Exactly.
But everybody keeps talking about these players and somebody like Durant heading to the Lakers. I still want to see what the Lakers are going to do post Jerry Buss, because they haven't proven that they can land, you know, the major free agents. Now, mind you, some of that, or you could say a large part of that, is probably because of Kobe. But we still don't know for sure. Even last year when they were trying to recruit LaMarcus Aldridge, LaMarcus Aldridge basically throw them a bone to get a second try at the free agency meeting because they botched the first one so bad. The jury's still out on them too. Like, I don't know what to expect from them. Now, I mean, we'll find out this summer because, like I said, Kobe's not looming over the franchise now. So, you know, we'll see.
I think we spoke about this once before. It seems like the Lakers' approach has always been about business ventures and opportunities to build their brand outside of basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And more in today's era, it's not as important about where you are physically that approach to bring in key players is not as big part of the whole scenario as it once was before. Like right now, players can build their brand more or less virtual wherever they are. So it really is about how the product going to be on the floor. And I don't think the Lakers has really been as diligent in trying to pitch that as opposed to pitching, oh, you're in Hollywood.
Yeah. Which back in the day, that worked, right?
That worked, exactly. Because if you wanted to do anything and get into that field, you have to be there. If you wanted to build your brand, like, you have to physically be there. Well, you don't necessarily need that anymore.
Yeah. And it's funny because the subject matter that we're talking about is the proofing point, right? OKC is a place, obviously it's a small market place in comparison to like LA, Miami, New York, Toronto even, you know, but they got two of the biggest stars in the league and they play in Oklahoma City. You know what I mean? So that right there tells you it doesn't matter. You know,
both exactly. You look at the marketing money that KD makes.
Sure.
It's not bothering him. And then LeBron is in Cleveland now.
Yeah.
That's an armpit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, let's be real. Call a spade a spade.
Right.
It's not inhibiting him to potentially be the first billion dollar
athlete.
Right?
Yeah.
Hey, but the question I wanted to ask you is, talk about LeBron. Who has more pressure in these finals? Is it Golden State Warriors after them basically having the most successful season in probably all of sports, arguably, with mm-hmm. a 73-9 record? And for them to have that and lose would be catastrophic. Or is it LeBron James to be going into his sixth straight final, 7 overall, but yet only having 2 rings?
It's a good question. It's a really good question, actually. I actually think the pressure, I'm going to lean towards Golden State. Just the fact that what you just said, they're 4 wins away from having the most wins in NBA history, you know, in terms of regular season and playoffs. They'll have 89 wins. No franchise has ever had that in one season, unless you're playing NBA Live. I mean, shit, Ellie, even if you get to 70 wins, when you're this close to winning again, You got to complete the mission. And just based on how great the elite of the West was, with the Warriors, the Spurs winning 67 games, the way the Thunder kind of flipped the switch in the playoffs, you can almost give the Cavs a pass, but you don't, just because of how great LeBron is and the expectation that he's bringing back to Cleveland on his own, I should say. To me, the stakes are for LeBron is, if he loses, he's not going to be 2-5 in the finals. And no top 10 player of all time, Headley, has lost that much during finals appearances since probably Jerry West back in the 60s when they're playing the Celtics, when they're winning like 18 titles in a row. Like, even Magic Johnson, he lost four finals, but he also won 5. I don't know where you're going to rate LeBron after that, but considering that he tried to put a super team together in a weaker conference and doing it again back home in Cleveland, and you're still coming out with 2 rings? I don't know. It's a bad look. It's a real bad look.
The only saving grace I would say with Cleveland is the first loss, it was almost like we got there by accident, and everybody expected them to lose badly to San Antonio, which they did. But the last 6, I'm trying to remember, because I know the last, at least three out of those 6, they did not have home court advantage. So, I mean, if I was trying to play devil's advocate, you can say that in the majority of the finals that Miami was in,
or LeBron
Miami,
was
sorry, that LeBron was in,
yeah,
they weren't the favorites. But again, regardless of your favorite or not, this, you know, if you're the best player on the planet, you're supposed to spit out better than a 2-5 record, right?
Right, I agree. So, what do you think? Who do you think the pressure's on more?
Well, I'll put it this way. You look at the New England Patriots. They went, they weren't perfect 16-0, and they lost in the, they lost in the Super Bowl. They're an after. I mean, that the potential of what that was going to be as opposed to what it is because of that one loss is night and day.
Yeah.
They're not, you know what I mean? The 72 Miami Dolphins are still considered the best team because of that loss. And that loss came from nowhere. I want to say the pressure should be on Golden State because of the season that they had, and especially because of the traumatic series win that they just had at OKC.
Right.
That the pressure should be on them to win. But I have to think if LeBron loses again, he's not getting any younger. The big three is not playing as expected. That this might be LeBron's best chance of bringing it back to Cleveland. Not because of how good Golden State is, because arguably it's the best team in history.
Right.
But Curry is not at 100%. I think he's still wavering a little bit. Draymond Green hasn't played his best series last series. Harrison Barnes has been, in my opinion, invisible the majority of this playoff.
Yeah, completely non-existent.
Yeah, it's funny because they offered him a $64 million contract, and I think he just burnt some Tubmans now. I don't see him getting that kind of money. I mean, sometimes you do that gamble and win. Tristan Thompson, I mean, he won handsomely playing poker like that. But I think it's gonna cost Harrison some money.
Yeah.
And who knows how much that series took out of Golden State. I have to think that was mentally very challenging to go through that. I just don't see Cleveland getting much better than the season that they had this year.
Yeah, for some reason I kind of feel like, actually, I feel like their window's closing a lot faster than people realize, and I've been saying that for the last little while. Just because, especially the injury history of Kyrie and Love, you can't depend on that, number one. They're not the most durable guys. And then the second part of it, too, it's been 2 years now. They're not the most together locker room, it seems like, anyway, right? Because anytime that they're struggling, you know, LeBron's always there throwing an innocuous tweet, you know, like passive-aggressive comment or something about Love. Like, if they get mollywopped and they lose in, like, they get swept. I'm just using that as an example. If they get, like, swept or they lose in, like, five games, Kevin Love is gone, you know, for starters. He's absolutely gone. And that's if, as we discussed earlier today, that's if LeBron stays, right?
Well, you know, before we enter that phase of the conversation just yet, to clarify something I was saying before, in terms of pressure, I feel the pressure is more on LeBron, but I think what would be a bigger debacle is if Golden State loses.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Right. No,
because of the record, everything, it would be a more catastrophic if Golden State lost. But I think there's ultimate pressure on LeBron, and partly the reason for that is, as you just touched on a little bit, is there was a report that came out that it came from Stephen A. Smith, who, you know, you could take it for a grain of salt because he's the same guy that said that the Rock was for sure going to the Lakers, and who knows how true that is now. If we have time, we could talk about that. I think there's a lot of posturing that's being done on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
But with that said, Stephen A. Smith was saying that there's a high probability if LeBron finally does bring a championship to Cleveland, which wouldn't be just for Cleveland Cavaliers, but Cleveland in a whole, because that city has been in a very documented drought for any kind of championship trophy in any sport, that he could potentially leave Cleveland again.
Wow.
And it's funny because, yes, he had a short contract. I always felt the short contract was in place to make sure that he kept Cleveland on his toes to bring him all the players and pieces that he needed in order to win. I never thought that he would dare leave again,
right,
without provocation. But they're saying, you know, if he wins, he could very well leave Cleveland again and go back to Miami. which almost feels like it's one thing for your girl to cheat on you, but to go cheat on you with the same dude again. It's like, how would Miami take that? Not Miami, but Cleveland again.
I swear, Henley, Cleveland is like the wife that he left that took him back with open arms. But every time they get into some sort of argument, he keeps calling her by her ex's name by mistake. And sometimes she'll wear some clothes that his ex bought him whenever they go out from time to time. There'll be a time when she goes on Facebook. There's her man again in the video with his ex hanging out with some old buddies back in Miami. And even though all her friends are like, girl, Cleveland, you need to be careful. You know, Cleveland's still remembering all the good times that they had, and they still keep fighting for that relationship. But I swear, Cleveland feels like a side piece, man. Like, I don't know, man. It's like every time you hear these stories, like, if I'm living in Cleveland, I'm a fan of the Cavaliers. I'm at the point where I'm like, you know what, man? LeBron can go. I know he's so great and everything else, but just every like couple of months, you keep hearing, well, hey, he might stay, he might go. And
but at least granted is like they're saying that he won't leave unless they win. Mm-hmm. So at least he's giving them something.
Do you believe that?
You know
what
I mean? Though? So like, at least, huh?
Do you believe that though?
I can't see him, as I said, unless it were provocation. I can't see him again just dipping. It's one thing to dip on a city, but this is your city that you grew up in, or that's the major city to where you grew up in. To leave them high and dry again after that very heartfelt letter, which we knew was BS.
Right.
He had no intention of staying here during a developmental year. That's the reason why he made sure certain people got shipped right away, as opposed to trying to see what you had first, because he wanted to build where he left off in Miami.
Right.
I you know what I mean? It would be tough for me to see him do it without them winning. But again, even if they do win and they lose, I mean, of course, it's still gonna hurt. It's still gonna hurt Cleveland if he dips at a high. But at least he gives them something. You know what I mean? It's one thing to run away with the mistress. It's another thing when they're like, at least I got some alimony out of it. You know what I mean? I mean, at least I'm a little bit sick. And the bromance between him and Dwayne Wade is real. Like, you talk about these friendships that these players have, you don't know how true it really is and how much they're really playing to the fans, but these two really are, like, close buddies and close friends. To the point, I think I heard a report that, like, they actually do each other, they'll order for each other and know exactly what they're ordering. Like, that's how close they are. They're really that close of friends, so who knows? When you're that tight with somebody, hey, I'm pretty sure that they still talk about, you know, playing together, the good old days, and who knows if that, you know, if that materializes again, it would be with Miami, I would think, just because of Dwayne Wade.
What did Gabrielle Union call him? Nettie and Seeley from The Color Purple?
Yes, that's... Yeah. And then I even heard, like, you know, I don't even know how this is even possible, but with Melo and Chris Paul, all of them playing together. I don't know what world, especially how NBA money needs to be distributed, that could actually happen in a true sense. But hey, you know, they talk about this kind of stuff, right? The one thing I will give to LeBron is that he beats to his own drum.
Mm-hmm.
He's not scared to make the bold decision, and maybe not always the most popular decision, to make things like this and ruffle feathers. He doesn't do anything that is by the book. And I honestly, a lot of people, it drives them crazy about how LeBron moves and the way that he acts. he's not taking orders from anybody, and he's, regardless where he's on in the total poll, he doesn't care what you think, either below or underneath him. He's going to do what he feels is best for him and his team, which, you know, you got to give him credit for that.
One thing I'll say to add to that is that, you know, I always believe that, and you know this obviously because you left the place that you were born and raised. Once you can leave the place that you lived before, like especially the place that you were born and raised, you're able to do it again. And just because of how he left Cleveland, it's messed up. Ideally, you don't think he'll do it again. But say Headley, like, and I mentioned this example because I'll give you a precursor to my prediction. Do you want to do that now, or actually, let me.
No, go ahead. You're there.
Okay, so I believe that Golden State will actually win this series in five, right? If that happens, and say, you know, they can't get rid of Love right away, do you think that he could walk away at that point and maybe just say to hell with it? Maybe just go back to South Beach? I mean, why not, right? Because I don't know. I just think that, I don't know, man. It's, you know, like when you're in a situation in a relationship.
You know, I'm not going to say that. I can't sit here and say that he can't do it because I never thought he was going to Miami in the first place. And he did it. So, as I said, he beats his own drum. He's done it once. Who knows? He might. Yeah. I mean, who's to say that he won't do it again?
Yeah. And like I said, when you're in a relationship, especially in a relationship where You almost have somebody wrapped around their finger. Do you really and truly respect them like they should? You know, I say no.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
So what's your prediction on the series? I know we got to wrap up, but what's your prediction on the series?
I do have Golden State winning.
Oh wow!
I think it's gonna be. Huh?
I said wow.
Yeah, I know. I have Golden State winning. I do think it's gonna go 7 though. I think it's going to be closer than people expect.
Really?
But I think Golden State will prevail in 7.
If it goes 7, that will make it another legendary series, we hope. But why I think it might not go as long is just because last year the argument was, of course, that, and it was an easy argument for everybody to make, that if Kyrie and Kevin Love were healthy, then the Cavs would have been champions, right? But the reason why the Cavs played Golden State the way they did and it went to 6 games was because, especially after Kevin Love got hurt and then when Kyrie went down, they had to structure their whole team on being a defensive unit. And last year in the playoffs, they were basically the best team in the playoffs on defense. And because they slowed the game down and slowed down the tempo and let LeBron just find shooters if he wasn't attacking the basket, that's what made that series closer than what it should have been, right? But now with Kyrie and Love back, they're now the worst defensive team in the league. And you can't have Kyrie and Love on the bench for long periods of time because they need their scoring. But if you keep them on the floor for long periods of time, it's going to be like a running faucet, right? And to me, I think where you fracture Cleveland right off the top is you got to attack the living hell out of Kevin Love. Like any chance you can get him on the perimeter, you attack him. If you're Draymond Green, you're just blowing by him. If you're Steph Curry, you're trying to get a pick and roll so that you can end up with Kevin Love and just abuse him. And to me, that's where things start getting fractured at that point. You know, because, again, those two guys on the floor, they're not good defensive players, especially Kevin Love. He's a good rebounder, but he's almost like a Calderon on defense. You know, shout out to Jose. But it's a situation, again, like, I just don't see how they're gonna it's gonna be like a long series. I think it's actually, I'm not saying they're gonna get blown out. I think it'll be 5 well played games, but I still think Golden State is just gonna, they're just gonna mollywop them more or less.
Yeah, part of the reason why I think it's gonna go 7. I think offensively, they're, especially how they have been playing in, especially the earlier rounds, their offense is as closely matched to Golden State's as they come. And even, I mean, I talk about the first 2 rounds, how great their offense was. If you exclude the 2 losses that we had in Toronto, their average victory against Toronto was probably like 30 points. It was stupid.
Yeah.
And I also believe that you're right. Their defense is not. They definitely have holes on defense.
They're horrible.
But I think people. Yeah. But I think like Dellavedova and Dante. I think there's gonna be some testy moments, and I think they're gonna play dirty. And I honestly think there's gonna be a little 90s ball by Cleveland, which they'll muck this series up to get Golden State a little off tilt. Again, I still think Golden State will prevail because, again, with home court advantage and as great as they've been playing at home, in the decisive game, I think Golden State will win. But because of that, I don't see this being a five-game series. I see them doing better than Portland. As they say, as long as they get the win, if it's short, if it's a blowout by 2 points, Golden State is gonna hoist the championship, O'Brien Trophy. But one thing I want to say is that if they do lose in five, I do think there's gonna be more suitors for Love than you expect. When being the Celtics, just because there are people still out there, especially in this starved NBA of trying to deem people superstars, you're going to have teams who are starving to get some of that feel. And Love, I think Love's price tag will be matched or will be accepted by, you know, they only need one, but I think it will be accepted a lot easier than you think.
Well, in today's, this new climate of the salary cap rising, this is actually going to be I wouldn't say a cheap contract, but it's going to be very generous for teams to move.
It'll be fair.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, exactly. It's not going to be as extravagant as it looks, as you said, because of the salary cap rising.
We've both said this from last summer. We couldn't understand why Kevin Love signed that deal, and you know, I mean, that's another story for another time.
You need to release that our kind of test pod that we did. Because I honestly want somebody in that cap of Love's to listen to this and hopefully reply to us, because I really want to know what was the thinking.
Yeah, it made no sense, and maybe that might be an idea to release sometime during the summer on the cutting room floor.
You made a point, because I remember saying that Love wasn't injury prone, and then afterwards you said, you know what, he's more prone than you think. And then I went back and checked the numbers. He did miss more games than I first had anticipated in my head,
yeah,
or I had thought in my head. But again, to me, it still didn't justify it. I mean, I put it this way. He hasn't been playing that. He hasn't been playing good. He has not. We know that. And I still think he would have got, he could still got the, especially with the cap rising, he could have still got that money that he signed for and be in a position, basically pick his team that he wants to be on. I still stand by that, even with the seasons he's had so far, the two in Cleveland.
Yeah. No, I and like I said again, that's something that I may have to release for real, because you know, we went into that extensively on that Mock podcast. Really did. But I know we got to go. So just my quick closing thoughts. I just want to send a special shout out to Anderson Varejao, because this is the rumor, but it looks like it doesn't matter who wins this series, he's going to get a ring just because of the amount of games he played both for Cleveland and for Golden State. He played 31 games for Cleveland and has played 33 games for Golden State. So I think either way, he might walk out of there with a ring on his hand. So shout outs to him.
It's funny because
keep getting them rings.
When I first saw it, I was like, yo, can he actually get a ring when he gets traded? And then I remember in past where you saw that, where they would do the presentation for their rings and a player that was on. Wait, has anyone got a ring for being traded?
I'm not sure.
I know there's been times where you've gotten rings where, say, in the off season, you move teams.
Yeah.
So once that team comes back, that player would be given a would be given his ring.
Yeah, like a David.
Or behind closed doors would be given a ring.
Like
but
a David
hasn't,
Lee.
Hasn't somebody?
Now, so like a David Lee this past season.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But has somebody really gotten a ring when they've been traded?
Oh, we're about to find out.
Because I didn't know that happened until that very thing somebody brought it up, and I was like, yo, that would be very interesting if that's the case.
Yeah, so
that's kind of funny.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, you know, the jury's out. I still want to know if that. I want to know if that's a real rule that once traded, if you played X amount of games, you still get a ring.
Yeah, I'm gonna do my research on that too. But that just seems crazy if that's the case.
Yeah, you wonder if he's gonna let some layups go by. I mean, he did have his whole tenure in Cleveland. If there's a team that he's more loyal to, you'll think it's Cleveland.
What a place to land! And like I said again, like for him to be able to walk away with the ring either way, that just seems ridiculous. That's why I said it's a rumor, because I'm like, I almost don't even believe that to be true.
Yeah, exactly.
Any closing thoughts before we go, sir?
No, I mean just hoping for a good series. I mean, I know this is completely off topic because this is ball, but also in the Bay, we got San Jose Sharks that are in the Stanley Cup Championship, Stanley Cup Finals for the first time in history.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, one of our own loyal friends, Joel Ward, is playing in his very first Stanley Cup Finals. And I just want to give blah, blah, to my boy that he's doing his thing over there. And then, you know, hopefully both San Jose Sharks and Golden State Warriors, it'll be the first time that a hockey team and a basketball team in the same area has won a championship. I don't know how many years. I can't remember what the exact stat is. But from what I remember, I think it hasn't been since the 90s. So kudos and good luck to Joel Ward and San Jose Sharks for that.
And if both of those franchises win, best believe E-40 is going to make a song about it.
E-40 at them Golden State games. I haven't seen E-40 at no San Jose games yet.
I haven't seen E-40, period. It's been so...
Yo, you didn't see him at the Golden State?
No, I know. He was. And I think he had a song.
I know,
out
that's
of...
what I'm saying. I was like, geez. Yeah. E-40 looks exactly the damn same, too. Nothing's changed. Still wearing the big old gold chains and everything, though.
And can't understand a word he says, even when he's not rapping.
Flip glasses and everything. Like, jeez. Street time warps.
All right. Well, on that note, this concludes the podcast. Brother Headley. Yes, man. That's number two, man. We got to, you know, make sure we pump more of these out.
Yo, I remember while listening to the podcast that you and Jan did.
Mm-hmm.
And remember all that good thing that Jan said at the end of the podcast about you?
Yeah.
About just the type of person you are and everything?
Uh-huh.
That's it. I got nothing else to say about it.
That's messed up, man. It's messed up.
Hey, I'm just saying, like, I'm not Jan. Don't expect none of that from me.
Let's cut it off right now. I'm not going to... I hate your guts. All right, we're done.